If you listen to this program, Vocal Point, you know that I'm very interested in all kinds of different aspects of American history. Hello and welcome to this portion. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest for this particular portion is a Catholic writer who's written a book about Catholic contributions to early America. The name of the book is Liberty's Lions, and his website is Dan Leroy. Leroy is spelled Leroy.com. And the subtitle is The Catholic Revolutionaries Who Established America. And I would say, well, who helped establish America, because, of course, there are many different strands that helped create this great country. Dan, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm very pleased and privileged to be part of it.
Sure. All right. Well, first of all, it's my understanding that some of the representatives from Maryland at the Constitutional not the Constitutional Convention, but rather the Continental Congress that gave us the Declaration of Independence, some of them were Catholics. So, for example, in that movie, which is not to be relied on as historically accurate, National Treasure, you remember that movie?
Yes.
Yeah, okay,
yes,
they have a scene, you know, where there's a man in a, I think it's like a thunderstorm-type scenario, when he is inside a horse and buggy type thing, and in this carriage you see him, and he's the longest lasting, he lived the longest of all the different representatives at the the Continental Congress that gave us the Declaration of Independence. And that was one of the Carrolls from Maryland, and he was a strong Catholic. That's one example. But yeah, go ahead and tell us about this book.
Sure.
Why did you decide to write it?
I wanted to write it probably for the simplest reason there is, which is, as an author, you're always looking for an angle. I read a column by a guy named Anthony Esselin, who is a professor, and he wrote about one of the guys who is in this book, Kazimierz Pulaski, the Polish revolutionary. And he mentioned in this column that there were some other Catholics who were critical to the revolutionary era. And so I was interested. I went looking for the book, and I couldn't find the book because there was none, at least not a book that tried to collect all of these stories in one place. And so I set out to write it, and I hope that's what I've done.
All right. And tell us about your own particular background. It sounds like you've written other books.
I have. Most of the other stuff that I've written has been in the field of music journalism, and the next book that I'm doing is also a music book. So this is an anomaly, I guess, in my catalog. But I was born Catholic, came back to the Catholic Church as an adult, and it was a really nice opportunity for me to not just write about these revolutionary Catholics, but a way for me to explore my own faith a little bit more deeply. And one of the things I hope that happens as a result of this book is that people who are Catholic, who are kind of used to being told that, if they're told at all, that their religious forebears didn't have a lot to do with the founding of the country because they were such a small minority, I hope it will maybe correct some of those misapprehensions and show them that it really is possible to be Catholic and be proud of your faith's contribution to this country's founding.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm just going to go ahead and sit down. Why don't you go ahead and wax eloquent at some of this material that you're talking about, especially early America?
Well, Catholics in the colonies make up about 24,000 to 30,000 people, and that's less than 2% of the colonial population at the time. So it's pretty easy on the basis of those numbers to conclude that Catholics really couldn't have had a great influence on the revolution and the revolutionary era. But among those 24,000 to 30,000 Catholics, many of whom were patriots, are also some folks who are mentioned in this book who are not just patriots, but are leaders of this cause. And they're leaders militarily, they're leaders economically, they're leaders intellectually, and of course, leaders spiritually. You mentioned one of them just a moment ago, Charles Carroll of Carrollton, who did represent Maryland in the Continental Congress. He was the only Catholic signer of the Declaration of Independence. But What people maybe don't know is that he was one of the first, perhaps the very first founder to conclude, and he concluded this 10 years before the revolution, that revolution, that a break with England was not only possible, but that it was necessary. And a lot of that conclusion was drawn on the basis of his Catholic faith and the experiences of Catholics in colonial Maryland. Maryland's a colony that's founded on the promise of religious liberty, and sometimes it did in fact happen, and other times it didn't go quite that way. But the conclusion that Charles Carroll of Carrollton drew, and he was drawing on the inspiration of Catholics really over the course of the whole 18th century, the conclusion he drew was that because Maryland was founded on the promise of religious liberty, that it was no longer beholden to English law and English custom exclusively. And because of the charter of the colony, which was founded to, at least in part, to provide Catholics this religious liberty, it was a completely new thing. It was no longer the part of England that a lot of people had supposed. And it's this idea, kind of writ large, that becomes, in a lot of ways, the basis for what we know now, the beginning of the Declaration of Independence, when in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the bonds. That the roots of that go back to colonial Maryland, and Charles Carroll of Carrollton is a guy who was really able to put that into a form that is compelling to a lot of folks. So that's one of the examples. There are military examples. Commodore John Barry, a lot of people believe, ought to be called the father of the American Navy. There are lots of Catholic financiers in both the East and the West who help raise the money that keep the fight going. And then there are spiritual leaders. There are folks like Charles Carroll of Carrollton's cousin, Father John Carroll, who later becomes the first Catholic bishop and then Archbishop of America, and who had a friendship with Benjamin Franklin that helped lead him to achieve both of those positions. But Father John Carroll was like a lot of Catholics at the time, a lot of Catholic priests. He was a circuit rider, and he brought the faith to people. And he not only brought the faith to people, but he brought a belief in the patriot cause. And you see that in some other folks mentioned in the book. Father Ferdinand Farmer, for example, who had a vast, vast territory throughout Pennsylvania and Maryland and New Jersey and New York, and brought the faith to thousands of Catholics, and also, again, brought this idea that America ought to declare its liberty from England.
Now, I should say, obviously there are other
whack things.
Sure, no, and there's a lot of people. I mean, like Sam Adams, who's he called himself the last of the Puritans, was one of the forerunners in the whole, seeing that yes, the day will come when we need to declare our independence from Great Britain. But the cool thing about the Founding Fathers is they were able to work together with like-minded men, whether they all agreed or not on specifics of theology. Now, one area where Catholic contributions are enormous, I don't know if you deal with it in the book or not, but it's very clear, and that is in the state of California, the whole coast is, in effect, you have this network of about 19 or 20 or something like that missions. Each was to be about a day's ride by horseback away from each other. And that's the beginning of Los Angeles and San Francisco and San Diego and all those. And they were all created by, Father Junipero Serra. And that's a huge contribution to America.
Absolutely. And that part of things isn't mentioned in the book, but you make a really good point that I try to touch on at least a little bit, which is, our history tends to be very Eastern-centric, and we tend to think, especially during the Revolutionary era, that everything that happens kind of happens in this fairly narrow territory all up and down the Atlantic coast. And we miss out on a lot of things that happen to the west. So in the book, we don't go as far west as California, but definitely do talk about Spanish Louisiana and all the territory along the Mississippi, which was, unlike in the east, it was a much more Catholic territory. And what happens in these western territories all up and down the Mississippi really sets the stage for the battles that we're much more familiar with leading up to Yorktown. If not for the money raised, if not for the battles won all along the western frontier, we might not have gotten to the stuff, again, that we're much more familiar with that happens back east. So it's a very good point that the Catholic influence in the east, it's fairly small, but as you go west, the picture does change pretty significantly.
Well, you know, there's still vestiges to your point when you mentioned Louisiana, in the sense, for example, that's the only state in the Union that doesn't have counties. Instead, they have parishes. And isn't that just basically directly, you know, isn't that the way it works with the Catholic Church, you know, with the, you know?
Yeah, I think it's one of those vestiges of that Catholic influence that we, you know, we've in some cases kind of lost the sense of where it came from. Of course, I guess that's true of a lot of things, not necessarily just Catholic things. So I guess one of the nice things about the book, or I hope it's a nice thing about the book, is that, you know, you certainly don't have to be Catholic to appreciate it. I think you certainly don't have to be Catholic to uncover some things that are similar to what you just said, some hidden parts of our history that I hope I've rendered maybe a little bit more accurately than some of the stuff that we find, like in National Treasure, for example.
Well, you know, it's funny. When I was watching National Treasure, my daughter was dating this one guy, and he said, "Remind me to never watch an historical movie with Mr. Newcomb again." Because, I mean, they had, you know, there were little errors, and I would correct them. And I remember this one specifically. They said, oh, there were 55 men in Philadelphia that signed the Declaration of Independence. No, it's 55 men who met in the Constitutional Convention in 1787, but it was 56 men who, you know, declared independence in 1776. All right, anyway, so let me ask you this. I understand there were some Catholics in the first slave revolt. We have about a minute and a half left.
There were. They were Congolese, and at least some of them were Catholic, and this happens in along the Stono River in South Carolina in 1739. And while a lot of the history is necessarily kind of murky, things that we have established are that there were some Congolese Catholic slaves who did venerate Mary, and there is a strong possibility that some of this veneration of Mary is what led up to this slave revolt, which is the only significant slave revolt in the colonies up to the time of the Revolution.
What year are you talking about? Or what decade even?
1739 is the date of this revolt. So it does precede the Revolution by the better part of 50 years.
Okay, we have about 30 seconds left. Lafayette was George Washington's virtually adopted son. Was his wife Catholic or something?
His wife was Catholic. Lafayette was not, by his own admission, a great Catholic. His wife was, and she tried to win him back to the faith and did that up into her deathbed. Was she successful? That might be one we find out in the next life.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're basically out of time. DanLeroy.com for more information, LEROY, the name of the book, Liberty's Lions. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.